day overclocked listeners. We're coming to you from murky looking Cape Town today. And our usual host, Lindsay Shooters, editor of Popular Mechanics magazine, has been caught in transit on his way back from the Huawei P20 launch. And his stand-in today is his right-hand person, Brendan Peterson. Say hello to the listeners, Brendan.
Should I just say hello, Brendan, or just hi, listeners?
Oh, that's enough from you. Okay, moving on. my name is Gavin Dudley. I'm the tech specialist at Highbury Sofika Media, and I edit the Tech Magazine, which is the biggest tech magazine in the country. And we've got a couple of things we want to talk about for you today. The first of which is some of the news that's broken over the last week and what it's turned into. We're going to put 7 minutes on the clock. And the first item up is Facebook. So, Brendan, your thoughts on the Facebook's Cambridge Analytics scandal?
Well, it's been fun because everyone's saying, you know, all my data's leaking out. But let's be honest, have we not all, to some degree, voluntarily given away all that information just so we can see, oh, hey, what's Gavin having for lunch today?
Sure. I think what's going on is that there's an entire generation of digital natives who have no concept of privacy at all.
Yeah.
You know, they've kind of just grown up giving away their data and knowing everything about everyone around them. And the concept of privacy is not a big deal for them. But us, I shouldn't speak generally for us, let's say me, we still have a concept of digital privacy and concerns that the more of this we give up, the more likely we are to end up in a dangerous social environment where people would say, I was one of them, who would say that I don't care about free speech because I don't really have anything important to say. You know, and obviously that's not how the system works at all. The truth is that we don't know what's going to be important for our personal privacy in the future, and we should be guarding it today. The Facebook story, for those who haven't followed it, is that Facebook gave a company called Cambridge Analytics broad access to the personal details of a whole lot of Facebook users, 50 million in total. 50 million is actually a drop in the ocean for Facebook, who has a billion users. But the truth is, there's 50 million people who didn't know that their data was being used, and they were, in fact, being manipulated by Cambridge Analytics. So what compounded the problem is that Mark Zuckerberg took a really long time to say anything about it while everyone was looking to him for direction and guidance and assurance. He just remained silent, and it eventually came out and gave a sort of a guarded apology. I guess for me, what's interesting is that this probably informs directly on what might be Mark Zuckerberg's presidential race to come in the near future. So issues like this become kind of important in the context of that.
Well, what's also interesting is that Facebook was obviously looking at bringing out a smart speaker. You know, in the lines of Alexa and Google Home. So obviously that's not going to happen because Facebook, you've already got so much access to my data. Why do I now want a speaker in my home?
That's a very good point.
It's become a far bigger issue for Facebook, especially as you said, since Zuckerberg took so long to answer. And his first sort of public statement, if you actually read it, the word sorry was not said
once.
That's right.
He was roundly criticized for that in the first place.
Which is a problem. And, you know, obviously countries around the world are saying, well, we need to see you because, you know, there's something wrong here.
All right. That's the Facebook issue. I mean, how it affects you directly, it's probably a bit kind of hard to pin down. I think it's just important to realize that you should be as cautious as you can about how much data you're giving away, because once you give up those freedoms, it becomes very, very hard to get them back again.
Yeah, I think the other thing is when you are logging into apps, you've got to make certain, you know, that it's not just saying, hey, can we get your Facebook information to log you in? See specifically what it's asking for, because a lot of these things we just, it's easier just to go ahead and, you know,
that is a very good point. How are we doing for time then?
We have about 3 minutes left.
3 minutes left. Good. Okay, let me spring the subject on you. Unfortunately, I haven't given you much chance to prepare on this particular topic, so I'll just take the baton and run. So on Wednesday, the US passed a law which was sneaked in on the back of a huge raft of 2,000 odd pages of documentation called the Cloud Act. Now, cloud stands for the Clarifying Overseas Use of Data Act. And how this really works is that the US is now free to give out the personal information of anybody's details on any US company's servers to any other country. So if you happen to have a Hotmail account and you happen to be Palestinian, the US is now free to give that data to the Israeli government, or, for that matter, to the South African government. In addition, the Ugandan government can now request from Microsoft that they give up details on one of their users logged into their system and give that information to a third party, like the Malawian government, just, you know, to use some crude examples. So this piece of information, which has been very controversial, how people's rights will be protected across international boundaries, this act that they sneaked through, which got signed without anybody actually knowing about it, has now laid everyone wide open to having their personal details shared between countries without them having any say over how that happens. What's even more disturbing is that it turns out this bill was supported by Facebook, well, no surprise there, Microsoft, Apple, Google, and one or two others. And the problem here, I think, is that the likes of Microsoft, Apple, Google just want to know exactly where the lines are drawn so that they can protect themselves in legal terms. They don't particularly care for your privacy. They just want to protect themselves from accidentally giving away your details and then being sued for it. As long as they know where the lines are drawn, they don't particularly care where the lines are drawn, it seems. Which is very disappointing, actually, given how, in a landmark case, Microsoft fought for the rights of some person whose details were held on an Irish server and wouldn't give them up to a US case, a US court. So it's disappointing how quickly that has all collapsed.
It's also interesting because Tim Cook has been very vocal about the data breach at Facebook, saying, you know, we need to be protecting people's information far more. And the fact that Apple is jumping on board with this is saying, well, maybe things are not as they seem in the world of tech.
Yes. And again, I mean, I feel as though perhaps we've been remiss in giving up too much privacy to start with. And now we're all one to whine and complain after the fact. But it was all of us who gave up all this detail to start with.
We have 1 minute left, Gavin.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Why don't you give us your top line thoughts on Huawei's P20, possibly the most interesting product to launch this year?
Well, I've actually seen some of the photos that Lindsay has taken with the regular P20, not the P20 Pro, and I'm not going to lie, it looks like it's beaten what was previously thought to be the best low light smartphone camera, which is the P9, by a
Samsung's
mile.
P9. Okay. You spoke to me about the DxO scores, and maybe you can explain to the listeners what DxO is.
So DxO is a company that essentially helps determine, you know, how good a camera is on a phone, but they actually also consult with companies. So when they're building the camera modules for their phones, they make sure that, hey, this is actually going to be better than what we've had before. And they help set standards in terms of performance and lighting and processing and.
So the geeks set a lot of store by the DxO scores because it's very hard for you to monitor camera quality without laboratory conditions.
And we're
We're done. So you think the P20 pictures are...
I think it looks amazing.
The DxO scores bear out.
I think it's going to be the one to beat this year.
All right. Okay. Very interesting. Onwards and upwards, Mr. Peterson. We're into our next segment of the show, and now we're going to look at what we call the how-to section. This is practical stuff that you can use in everyday life regarding tech and gadgets. And you're going to put 7 minutes on the clock for us.
I am. Shall we begin?
Ka-ching. Tick, 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 tick. And what we're looking at is something we've covered recently in Tech Magazine, which is how many tech myths seem to never get busted. They just get perpetuated from, you know, year to year, from decade to decade in some cases. So eventually, we got some of the hard science on some of these issues. And we think you'd be suitably enlightened, but I'll give you a taste of what you'll find in our article, which is coming up in our next issue.
Well, actually, I have a question about this.
Yes,
So I think you were actually going to speak about this anyway. But the other day, I was at a petrol station with a friend of mine, and the petrol attendant was like, why are you on your phone? Literally, he was through the window, why are you on your phone? You're not supposed to be on your phone. Pointed at the sign.
Right.
So if I'm on my phone, if someone happens, Gavin, you phone me while I'm at the filling station.
Yes.
And I answer the call, is that petrol station going to explode, yes or no?
Yeah, so it turns out that there's actually no threat, no explosive threat from using your cell phone at a petrol station. I think in the early days of cell phones, they didn't really know entirely how the technology might impact an environment like petrol stations. But the most important thing is that they actually wanted people to pay attention to what was going on in the petrol forecourt. So you're speaking to the attendant, you're giving him the right amount, you're monitoring what's going on. Because people get distracted. Then the payment goes wrong, they've got the wrong amount of gas in the car, they don't have the money to pay, or they do something else equally stupid like drop a cigarette butt out the window, all because they're busy on their phone. So even after it was established that technically nothing dangerous would happen between the phone and the gasoline, they decided to keep up the don't use your phone in the forecourt just because they needed, you know, to keep people's attention on what they were doing. Because it is kind of a stupid environment for someone to drop a cigarette butt out the window, for example. You know.
Yeah.
So no, you cannot blow up anything at a petrol station with a cell phone. Well, unless you're actually planning to blow up something with a
cell
phone.
Which is not something that you should be doing.
Right. So what are one of the other most popular ones is to do with magnets and data disks and flash drives and so on. So if you understand how memory works or how hard drives work, they are in fact bits that get moved around on hard drives using a magnetic and electronic process. Hard drives are a lot more susceptible to magnets moving the data bits around in the hard drive storage. But even there, you would need enormous magnets, like the size of magnets they use for those scans they do in hospitals, you know, the kind of magnets that are the size of a room, basically, to actually impact data. So the fact that your flash drive is sitting next to your phone in your handbag actually makes no difference whatsoever. In fact, you could put your flash drive on top of a magnet and have nothing untoward happen to it at all. Memory cards, flash drives, all those things are perfectly fine around reasonable magnetic fields. Even you can put them through X-ray machines, I believe, and that's fine as well. Unless you've got a massive magnet, like a hugely powerful one, often used for medical purposes, your data should be absolutely fine. So there's another myth busted for you. You can read more about that in Tech Magazine, of course. Let's see, what are one or two of the other crazy ones I read?
We traveled quite a bit in our careers. And if you go overseas and you're on a plane, you know, you never get the whole switch your phone off. You have to switch your phone off as we're about to land. And it's something that I see only really seems to happen in South Africa.
Oh, I see.
So again, my question is, you know, is it really going to happen? Because I have been one of those people who have not switched their phone. Because I'm like, hey, in the US, nothing's happened. In Asia, nothing's happened. In Europe, nothing's happened. I think we'll be fine.
But here's a, before I answer that one, here's a parallel funny story. A friend of mine left their phone turned on in the overhead locker. And as the plane flew over about 5 or 6 different African countries, his phone logged itself into each one of their networks.
Oh, no.
So by the time he got to the outside, he had this massive data bill because his phone kept switching into roaming agreements with 5 or 6 different networks. Anyway, that's besides the point. So the truth is, no, your phone actually has no impact whatsoever on the electronic systems of the plane. In the first place, the plane electronic systems are heavily shielded by metal cages and that kind of thing. So can have no impact whatsoever. Again, what happens to be important is that the flight attendants really need you to pay attention during takeoff and landing, because we know that that's when the most incidents occur, disaster incidents, and they really need your full cooperation if something goes wrong. But if you're listening to music, you can't hear the instructions, you have no idea what's going on, and so on and so forth. So the truth is, the electronics in your phone make no impact on the plane whatsoever, despite what you've been told. As long as you're paying attention, everything should be absolutely fine.
So it seems like most of these myths actually are centered around you paying attention to your surroundings instead of the tech actually having a negative effect on wherever you are.
So, you know, for example, what's not a myth is that you will have an accident if you insist on talking on the phone while you're driving. You know, not a myth. The truth, yeah. So there are a couple more myths we bust in Tech Magazine. One of them is when you put your phone or your iPod or your music device or whatever on shuffle play, most people just assume it's picking songs at random. In fact, it's not picking songs at random. What it's doing is using a very complicated mathematical algorithm to figure out what songs it should play in what sequence so that it doesn't play 2 Tina Turner songs back to back and so on, which it could, that could actually happen if you were in a truly random mode. But using a clever algorithm, it figures out what not to play after what. So it sounds artificially much more random than actual random selection. So those are some of the myths that I found most interesting. Other things we brought up in the article was, does playing violent video games make you a violent person?
In 1 minute.
Okay. That's about all I have to say. Let's maybe if you're listening to this podcast, you can contact us and tell us what myths you believe could be busted or should be busted, and let us know what issues you have an issue with, and perhaps we can look into them for you and come back to them in future podcasts to let you know what's really going on in the tech world and what's just urban legend.
Well, I can bet you someone's going to ask about battery life and, you know, should I wait until my battery gets to 0%
before I charge? Yes, in fact, that very issue is covered in our story. So make sure to get the next issue of Tech Magazine and find out whether you need to let your battery run down before you recharge it. I'm not going to give you the answer. Buy the magazine. Be well informed. We've got another 7 minutes on the clock. And in this segment, we look at one of the most topical issues that happened in the country this week, in fact, happened in the world this week. And we're going to get expert input later on from Lindsay Shooters, editor of Popular Mechanics, and my co-host. He, however, has been caught in transit and can't be with us today, but he'll chip in later. But Brendan, why don't we talk about the tech news of the week, which is the launch of Huawei's new flagship phones. And maybe I could start off by saying, I find it extremely irksome that the likes of Donald Trump can block huge brands like Huawei, brands that are in the ascendancy, brands that have come out of nowhere and have done spectacularly well, especially at the value segment, that people like Donald Trump can block brands like Huawei from going on sale in the US simply because they are Chinese. They are Chinese and not to be trusted. It's just completely absurd.
It is, because, I mean, he's targeting Huawei. ZTE is kind of thrown in this, but they're like, we haven't done anything. But it's also more interesting if you look at the fact that, hey, Lenovo's on sale in the US, Motorola's on sale in the US, and Motorola used to be a US brand, but it's now owned by Lenovo, which is a Chinese company.
Yes, yes. I think there's one word that springs to mind, and that is protectionism. Let's make sure that Apple gets to eat the whole cake, you know, and not have to compete too fiercely with anyone else.
And it's interesting because, as you said, Huawei's launched the new P20, and I was, you know, obviously following along the event, which is where Lindsay has been, which is why he's not here at the moment. But MKBHD, everyone knows MKBHD, he tweeted out a picture of the P20, and he literally said in all caps, why would you not allow a phone with all these amazing specs to be sold in the United States? With like 7 million question marks.
Okay.
And, you know, when you've got people of that level in the tech industry asking this question, it's, you know, it's exactly what people should be saying.
So why don't you tell us what's so fantastic about the phone then?
So we knew Huawei was going to be launching 3 phones. That was, you know, one of the worst kept secrets ever. They actually surprised us with technically 2 more. Actually, it's just one with 2 different storage variants.
But wait, one more thing.
They didn't say that, though. Even though they kind of copied Apple with a lot of other things, unfortunately. But yeah, so P20, P20 Lite, and P20 Pro are the 3 phones that have been announced. Coming to South Africa, actually, on the 5th of April. So around the corner. And the standout one that everyone is talking about is the P20 Pro, because it's the first phone that's got 3 camera lenses on the back.
Okay, now I'm going to stop you there because I think this is precisely what Lindsay wants to talk about.
Yeah.
So let's hear what Lindsay has to say about it.
So guys, I've been a big fan of Huawei's approach to camera technology, and this has blown my mind. It's absolutely blown my mind. There's 3 cameras on there, so you're getting a 40 megapixel color sensor, you're getting the standard 20 megapixel a monochrome sensor, and then you're getting like an 8 megapixel 3x zoom telephoto lens. So what they do is you get like the 3x hybrid, that was the 3x zoom that was just off the 8 megapixel camera, and then they oversample the 40 megapixel sensor, so they like crop into it, and then they stitch that together with the 8 megapixel one and the monochrome to add like more detail and stuff, all in real time to give you 5x hybrid zoom. It is incredible. It's lossless. It's amazing. Color sensor also like does that pixel binning thing where it co-opts like 4 pixels to make like 1 big pixel. So in standard auto mode, it's shooting at 10 megapixels. What else are they doing? Like the color processing is better. Like they've got this new Leica color sort of effect on it. Like they're really using that processor to do things. So, you know, Samsung and Sony both have the 720p, or at least the 960 frames per second super slow-mo. So Huawei are doing that, but not using the RAM built into the imaging chip. It's actually doing it just by the power of the processor. So they're bringing in all those shots at those mad frames per second and then giving you like a cool video. It's incredible, guys. I am stumped. I don't know where camera technology is going to go to now on the mobile phone. This is the best camera on a mobile phone right now.
All right, well, that's his first-hand experience. He's, out of all of us, he's the only one who's actually had hands-on with the product so far and has actually taken some pictures. So that's his, I know he's a big fan of the Huawei camera system. Tell me, Brendan, are they using the Leica lenses? Is that now a standard?
Yeah, so that's a standard. And I mean, you know how excited Lindsay is about all of this. Yeah, and it's also, you know, last year they brought out the first selfie camera that was made by Leica as well. And the question is, of course, why do you need 24 megapixels on a selfie camera? But apparently you do.
Right.
So, you know, Oppo did, I think, 25 megapixels.
Yeah, I just don't get that, but okay.
But also,
who are we to judge?
Design. Have you seen the design?
No.
Of the P20 and P20 Pro? They've got a notch, we have to say this.
Okay.
And I'm not the world's biggest fan of the notch, okay, unfortunately. But as Lindsay can attest, you know, you've actually got a software function that lets you essentially black out the notch.
The
so it just
notch,
blacks
right.
out the bars
okay.
on the side.
For those who don't know what he's talking about, the notch was an idea that came up with the iPhone X. And while the whole phone front screen is screen, they have to create a small panel at the top for the sensors that read your face to you that take your selfie pictures and so on. There's no way to eliminate those things. So there's a tiny little panel up at the top, but it does kind of jut into what would otherwise be a full screen phone. So those are now being affectionately referred to as the notch. And there's much discussion about how we can one day get rid of the notch, but to date, no one's managed. And even the new P20 Pro has a notch.
Yeah, so all of them have a notch. It's also got a fingerprint scanner on the front. And the design, though, on the back is what everyone's talking
Sorry,
about.
Sorry, the fingerprint scanner, is it my understanding that that's an under glass?
No, so that's been a surprise phone that Huawei threw out. So they brought out a Porsche design Mate RS.
Mm.
And last year, Gavin, you'll remember at Mate 10 Pro, they announced the Porsche design Mate 10 Pro, which was like, what, 27,000?
Outrageous,
So now they've brought out the Porsche design Mate RS, and that's got the under glass fingerprint scanner, but it's also got a fingerprint scanner on the back, so you can decide which one you want to use.
Ah, yes, excellent. Okay.
No notch.
Okay.
Which is cool, and it's the only Huawei phone, the Mate RS, that actually does wireless charging. P20 does not.
Okay,
so
I'm wireless charging, one of those things that you really wish would get more traction, and it just seems to take so long. Okay, let's hear what else Lindsay has to tell us about the phone, and in particular, let's ask him about the artificial intelligence that now goes behind the camera system, which is hugely interesting to me, and I think that is something critically important to watch for the future. So, Lindsay, what's up?
Cool. So the Kirin 970 is a bit of old hat. I mean, they launched it with a Mate 10 Pro last year, at the end of last year. So it's a Huawei-built chipset that's like super fast. It performs as good as last year's Snapdragon 835s, which is a little bit not so cool right now in this world. But it, importantly, it has this neural processing unit. So it's like it's essentially a graphics card built into the processor so that it can accelerate the computing. So it gives you like more computing nodes so that it can start acting as a neural network. So it's got like serious AI smarts, and they're using that to encrypt a lot of their security, a lot of the personal data, and they're using that in the camera. Like last year, the Mate 10 Pro could identify 13 different scenes through the camera. This year, on the P20 Pro, it can go up to 19 different scenes that it will auto-detect. They've also built it into like the camera app, so you get this feature called AI Master that acts as... Like, it will give you hints on how to frame your picture correctly, and it will automatically recognize the scene and set all the levels for you. And the images just look incredible. But it really feels like Huawei is finally turning the corner where they're utilizing this NPU to its fullest capability. Guys were telling me at the event, I spoke to Jim Zhu, which is one of the Huawei executives, and he was saying that they are working very hard to encrypt on the hardware itself, so that like none of your, so the P20 family comes with the face ID sort of thing. So that data gets saved on the device and gets encrypted at the hardware level, as well as your fingerprint data. And then like whatever's going transmitting to the Huawei cloud service is also very, very, very tightly screwed together and highly secure. So yeah, it's them just kind of saying that maybe the guys in the US are being a bit harsh. Like a lot of their concerns are unfounded on anything.
Oh, that's very interesting, all that coverage of the Huawei P20 launch in Paris. Thanks very much, Lindsay, for your notes in absentia. We've got just a minute to wrap up before we leave for this week. Brendan, why don't you tell us what to look out for in the magazine that's on shelf at the moment?
Yeah, so the current issue of Popular Mechanics, the April issue with that amazing cover, is actually all about something Lindsay has written about. And we all know about the water crisis in South Africa, specifically Cape Town at the moment. Lindsay has done a nice in-depth piece about, you know, what's happened, how we got here, and essentially how, in theory, we should never be in this situation again. It's quite a good read, so I would definitely check it out.
Yeah, it seems to be well populated with pictures of your esteemed editor, including one them pouring, I don't know, a suspicious amount of water over his head.
It is. I hope he's reused that water. So.
Yeah. Great story. In Tech Magazine this month, we're looking at the real purpose of drones, which is how they will be used in business, not for flying around like a hobbyist, but how drones will actually be used in business for deliveries, for example, and possibly for surveillance, for monitoring buildings, this kind of thing. My personal interest, those of you who follow the magazine will know I have a huge personal interest in headphones, and in particular, fully cordless headphones. So these are where the two earbuds are not even connected by a piece of cable at all. You put one in each ear, they connect to each other by Bluetooth, and then from there connect to your phone. So this gives you complete mobility to move around and so on. But we're covering five or six different pairs of those, some which are as affordable as 700 Rand. So we'd like you to read about those. And going off at a tangent, a story about nuclear bunkers, how nuclear bunkers still have a role to play today, how they're still being built all over the world, and how you could build your own nuclear bunker if it came to that. And that's what you'll get out of Tech Magazine this month. And we're going to thank you very much for listening, and tune in again next week. Thanks, Brendan.
Thank you for having me.